Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Cancer Survivor Show, brought to you by the Chemo Girls. So you have Sharon and
Lucy. How you doing today, Sharon?
I'm doing great, Lucy. Missing you, but I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. I think I'm doing better than you, though.
What's up?
Well, I got a special treat this weekend. I got to spend about 4 hours holding a newborn baby.
What?
Ha ha.
Don't even tell me something like that.
Sorry, I got to rub it in a little bit.
Oh, did the baby smell sweet?
Oh, my goodness. It's a precious little girl. Her name is Jennifer, and she is the granddaughter of some of our best friends. And poor little Jennifer's mom has developed a very serious kidney infection since she was born, and my friend Carolyn had to take her to the doctor the other day, and so it was a terrible thing to have to do, but I volunteered to keep this baby so they didn't have to take the baby to the doctor's office and expose the baby to all those germs.
Yeah, you're just talking smack to me right now, aren't you?
It was a terrible job to have to do, but I volunteered to do it.
Threw yourself right under that bus, didn't you?
And I enjoyed every minute of it, but especially feeding that little girl.
Oh hush.
That's precious. What is it about feeding a baby that is just one of the most precious things in life?
It really is.
I think that's, why babies are babies.
Mm-hmm.
It's to create those bonds of nurturing and helplessness, reaches out for help, and help reaches out to provide to the helpless, and that's the human bond there.
It really is.
It's so early. Mm-hmm.
So I covet that experience, and you know this.
I know. That's why I had to rub it in a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm glad.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Well, you just come over to my house, and I will take you to see Miss Jennifer, and I bet you can get some loving, too.
Okay. It's a date. We'll do that.
Okay.
So today is the second part of our radiation series.
Mm-hmm.
Part 2 of 2.
That's right.
And in the first part, you were sharing with us what that very first day going in to the radiation clinic is like, and that it's not really your first day of radiation.
That's right. Mm-hmm. It's a day of going through the motions to get radiation. It's getting all the machines lined up exactly the way your doctor wants them to be lined up. And it's getting your little tattoos, if that's what's recommended, in order to line your beams up. And it's getting your adaptive positioning equipment formed and specialized to your contour, and it's about getting ready for the process.
Kind of a setup day.
Mm-hmm.
But then we left that subject promising a little more information, like the rest of the story, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. We did. So today, everyone, we're going to talk about what exactly radiation therapy is and what to expect, I guess, on day 2 in the radiation ward, but it's actually the very first day of receiving the treatment itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So just really want to review real quickly what radiation is. And for any of you guys that haven't gone to your sources to research this, radiation therapy is the use of high energy radiation to kill cancer cells by damaging the DNA that's in those cells. Because cancer cells, as we all know it, they're mutated cells.
Mm-hmm.
They're human cells that have gone bad, right? And
right.
So radiation is different than chemo. Chemo is a drug that kills cancer cells. Radiation is high energy that is very specific to the area being treated, and it uses a high energy radiation beam in order to be effective.
Right. Right. And I think a lot of the time, not always, it can be used so many different ways. It can be used as a standalone treatment. It can be used following surgery, like in your case.
Mm-hmm. That's
right. Or sometimes it's used, in my case, there was surgery, chemo, and then radiation.
Mm-hmm.
There are other times there's radiation, surgery, and then chemo. I mean, it just all depends on your situation.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Your doctor is the one that is going to determine what your best course of sequence is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in talking with the population out there and the work that we do, I think people get real confused on why someone does something in one situation where someone else does something differently. And so I think our listeners just need to know that it's real specific. For example, if a person is diagnosed with a very aggressive cancer, they may get chemo first,
mm-hmm.
followed by their surgeries. Whereas if another situation, surgery may come before chemo and radiation. So very specific to what that cancer is like, what type it is, the severity of it, the location,
right.
A lot of things that will determine how the treatment is panned out.
Well, yeah. I mean, and when they do chemotherapy or radiation first, I think typically chemotherapy, sometimes it's that they're trying to shrink the affected area before they open you up. And
exactly.
When they follow it with radiation and chemotherapy, it's more like the mass was very manageable to remove, and they're just trying to tidy up the job afterwards and be sure there's nothing left residually.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But again, we are such lay people. We're just going on our limited amount of experience here as far as that's concerned.
That's right, yeah. I think we just really want people to know a little bit about what to expect.
Yes.
The first day in is, of course, the diagnostic day. But the first day of walking into the suite for the first treatment, I think that's what we want everyone really to be aware of. And, you know, thinking about our topic today, Sharon, I was thinking, you know, our audience out there is so broad. We have all type of cancer listeners out there,
mm-hmm.
or family or loved ones of different cancers. And they're all different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yours and mine, our experience was breast cancer. But we don't want to talk only to breast cancer. We want to talk to all of the concerns and the questions out there. So I think instead of going into a whole lot of detail about one specific type, I was thinking more about talking generally about what to expect that day.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great.
So, what about your first day? Were you kind of surprised at what was behind the curtain there
when
you walked in?
Of course, the first day of setup, I was made very aware of what I don't know what you'd call it, but it felt a lot like a chamber, what the radiation chamber felt like. In my case, of course, this has been on close to 13 years ago. It was a dimmed room. There were some light beams that were sort of like crosshairs and that sort of thing that they used to line me up. I could see some people behind glass that were in control of the machinery and moving me and that kind of thing. And then I had people that were physically manipulating my body to get me set up. That was
right.
All the same as the first day. But the setup mm-hmm. was so much faster because they had already made their plan. They had already marked me. They were just getting me in position and running the machines. The thing that still stands out to me was I was fairly chilly. And also, you know, I don't know why I didn't expect to disrobe for this, but I didn't. By the end of radiation treatments, I was fairly accustomed to that. But in the beginning, it was uncomfortable. I won't say I was really charged up about it, but it was hard to get comfortable in a big open room like that with people behind the glass.
It really is, yeah.
So I like to make people aware of that.
Yeah. So, you know, what I remember is the first day of treatment and every day after that is walking in, going behind a curtain, mm-hmm. picking up your gown,
mm-hmm.
taking off whatever needed to be taken off. For me, it was, you know, waist up clothing, putting your gown on so that it opened in the front so that they could manipulate your positioning once you got on the table. And two, yes, walking into that cold room.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember asking the tech one day, Sally. Sally was the tech that I had most days. And I said, Sally, why is it always so cold in here? And she says, well, we have to kind of keep it cold for the machines. They like it that way.
Yeah, I think I asked the same question.
Yeah, but that makes sense, doesn't it? That
mm-hmm.
high energy heat is going into your body. So you can imagine that those machines would get kind of charged up.
But did you feel anything?
You don't really feel a thing, do you? Interesting thing, and I don't think that anybody had told me that I wouldn't feel anything.
Yeah,
nobody told me I would, but I think I went in there with the mindset that I was going to feel some heat.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to feel maybe even a little bit of pain or something when that beam came in, a prickle or something, but it really is very non-eventful, isn't it?
Yeah, it was the word I was thinking of is just anticlimactic after all of that preparation and exact, you know, positioning and stuff. I'm waiting to be zapped. And
right.
I was, but I could have been zapped that way and never known it. All I knew was the sound of it happening and no particular physical.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just, when you were talking heat, I was thinking, you know, isn't it funny that there was, but I felt nothing.
Right. Now, you know, I think that as time goes on,
mm-hmm.
That can be one of the side effects is as the days that you receive your therapy progress, I did start feeling a warmness in my skin.
Mm-hmm.
I did start blistering some. I don't think I had a really, really severe case of burning on my skin, but I did have some blistering that was easily treated with some antibiotic that my doctor recommended for me. So I did want to mention that today is in terms of things that happen in the process as it goes on, you may need to call that to someone's attention,
mm-hmm.
either your doctor's attention or the tech that's administering your treatment. They need to know things like that because don't just think that you just have to grin and bear it, right?
Mm-hmm.
They are there to make you as comfortable as possible, and there are some great medications out there.
That's right. I mean, you may have to endure some burning, but there are things
mm-hmm.
they can do. In my case, I don't remember a lot of discomfort on my skin, but in the affected area, my skin turned sort of brownish. You could see the evidence more than me being able to feel it, but possibly that's because the area I had received so much surgery to that area that
right.
I may not mm-hmm. have had the nerve endings that you did, but
right.
you could see I didn't blister, but I turned sort of brown, and my skin stayed discolored for over the course of years. It faded to be normal.
Okay.
So that's a possibility.
Right, right. And, you know, we are actually talking about external
mm-hmm.
radiation. External beam is what is called radiation. Let's do mention, Sharon, that there is a type of radiation that is called internal
mm-hmm.
beam therapy. And basically that has to do with your tumor site or your cancer site being injected with a sort of pellet
mm-hmm.
that is put into that site. And then the pellet is radiated externally. And the benefit of that type of therapy is that your treatment period is a lot shorter period of time
mm-hmm.
because that radiation is staying in your body as opposed to being just administered to the body.
Right.
In a dose.
And it's so specific.
So in terms of length of treatment, internal radiation therapy can be sometimes a lot shorter than the course of going in for external. I can remember being very disappointed whenever my surgeon started talking to me about the different options. That's before I had made it to my radiation oncologist. And you know how busy I am at work.
I do.
I'm going, like, how in the world am I going to have to take off every morning for the next 2 months? You know, how am I going to do that? And so he started talking to me about the different types of radiation, and he got me convinced that he probably didn't do it, but my mind did. But he planted the seed that might be a possibility, because that meant I would be through in about 2 weeks, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was sounding a lot more
appealing. Yes.
Yeah. But once I got to my oncologist, that quickly diminished because my tumor site was a little bit too big for that type of therapy, and she did not feel comfortable that she would be treating the whole area that needed to be treated. So just to mention that there is, different ways that radiation can be administered. It can be either external or it can be an internal beam placement.
Well, and speaking of external, something that I would like to mention is that although essentially it's more peripheral on your body that they are administering this external radiation, radiation does not, its effect does not stop when they turn the machine off.
Mm-hmm.
Your area, it kind of continues, for a lack of better term, to cook over a longer period of time than you would think. Although,
right.
You know, I can't speak to most radiation. Most people I've talked to, radiation's a very frequent thing. For me, I went 6 weeks, 5 days a week. But several months later, I end up with a heart issue because all of this happened to my chest. And I will have to say that my chest is, I'm not talking about my, you know, my breasts, but my actual chest, the circumference of my rib cage is inordinately small, always has been.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there, you know, because this area continued to cook for some period of time, I ended up with an odd side effect a couple of months later, which was pericarditis. And they did say it was secondary to radiation. Like with everything else with me, however, that is very unusual.
Mm-hmm.
But it did kind of highlight the fact that it wasn't over on my last day of radiation. My body was still undergoing change as a result of the treatment that I underwent for
mm-hmm.
some time after that. And, of course, the pericarditis did not end up causing any permanent damage that I'm aware of, and it hasn't been an ongoing issue. But it was something I had to deal with after I thought everything was over, you know.
Right.
So
uh-huh.
although it is external radiation, you can have some internal effects from that.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that was terrible what you had to go through there with that. And if I remember correctly, that was almost kind of overlooked.
It was totally almost overlooked because I started having a problem. It was a pain in my rib cage, sort of like the intercostally, like between my ribs, those muscles that run between them. And my surgeon, I was preparing to undergo reconstruction, you know, and that was going to be expanders and the whole bit. And I was scheduled for surgery. And I went in and saw him at my pre-op appointment, and I said, you know, I'm feeling like I shouldn't do the surgery. He said, well, you're just feeling queasy. I said, no, I've got this pain. He said, you've just pulled a muscle, sweetie. There's nothing wrong. And I remember, I don't know how many times I ended up crying in a doctor's office, probably 3 or 4 times before it was over, but I cried, and I just said, I know it makes no sense, but I simply cannot go in for the surgery. I don't know why. Because I want the surgery, but I can't go. And it was mm-hmm. less than a week later that little pain turned into me several days in an ICU unit. And and it was just the beginning of that pericarditis. And so, again, you know, we've said it before, when you have a gut feeling, it, you know, sometimes it seems illogical, go with it.
Right.
Not fear, because fear is something different. We can walk through fear. But if it is a gut instinct, be your own best advocate and listen to your body. So in the end, I went through the treatment, and then I went through reconstruction, and all was well and good.
Yeah, thank the Lord on that.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I wanted to talk to another one of the very common side effects of radiation therapy, kind of generically, talking across the board of the different types of radiation and the areas that are being radiated, and that is fatigue.
Yes, Lord.
You know what? I have researched and researched this, and they really do not know for sure what causes fatigue. There's some speculation that it's a side effect of the therapy, and some people even say, well, you're just having to go to the doctor and disrupt your lifestyle and blah, 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 just adding some, you know, stress and time to your day. But it is a real thing.
Oh, it is.
And I think for me, I'm speaking for me, and I've spoken to some other people across the years about this as well, but it seems to linger for a little while.
It does.
It takes you a good 6 or 8 months sometimes to kind of get that energy level back. Sometimes, and this is very unlike me, I would actually have to lay my head down at work in the afternoon if I had just a little pause in the schedule, maybe even put something down on the floor and just lay down for a little while because I was just totally wiped. And so I think that is a very, very common side effect. Now, I've looked for this in the literature, but I've really not been able to find very much on this. And I don't know whether you can attest to this or not, Sharon, but after my radiation for about 2 years, it seemed like I got sick all the time. I'm not a person that gets sick. I hardly ever have the flu, a stomach virus, or anything, but every time I turned around, I was sick.
Well, to be honest with you, I had the opposite, but I think it was because I was always sick, and I think the chemotherapy killed a lot in my body that shouldn't have been there. Like my face cleared up permanently. I had several things like that that cleared up. But because you didn't do the chemo, I imagine that just it pulling your body down, I guess.
Yeah. I even had pink eye twice.
Wow.
And I've worked with children now for 32 years, but at the time, 28 years, had been around pink eye for 28 years. Never gotten it in my life, and I got it twice. So there you go. But, you know, all is well now. I don't, I'm back to my usual and hardly ever get sick status, and there you go. But I think you just, that's one of the things we want you guys to hear out there is it's not in your head. It's not just you. It does kind of wear you out. So just kind of keep that in mind and just know that you've got to rest more. Don't push yourself. Read your body. Like Sharon just said, know what your body is telling you to do. And if you do need to take a nap in the afternoon, if you have that availability, do that.
Sure.
If you don't, make accommodations to go to bed early that night.
Right.
Try to protect your body and try to give it the rest that it needs.
Well, and if you think about it, through cancer treatment, your body's having to replenish and rebuild cells. And it is exhausting. It's physically exhausting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so definitely try to get rest. Do not be the guy who says, I'll just push through. To some degree, I mean, we don't want cancer treatment to be an excuse for anything. But if you are earnestly reading your body, don't let anyone else decide how much you should or shouldn't be doing, when you should be tired, when you shouldn't, based on their experience. Definitely read your own cues. Like one of my sons has always struggled with kind of allergies and asthma and that kind of thing.
Right.
And when he's sick, he rarely feels sick. He's not that child that comes to you and flops and looks pitiful. you're having to say, stay down, you know, we need to rest. But about a week ago, he got something that would have been more flu-ish. And that was so surprising to him because he felt horrible. And I think it was his first experience with fatigue because he just looked at me like he was so worried. He said, Mama, I just feel like I have blocks of concrete on my feet and I'm having to drag them to walk. And I said, sweet baby, that's called fatigue. You know, he just had never really felt bad. And that I did walk around that way. I'm sure you did too. A lot where you just felt like somebody had strapped all this weight to your arms and legs and you were just pulling it with you through the day. And it does build over time. So where if you go four or five times, you're not feeling fatigue. That's great. You may never. But if by the second, third week, you know, it may kind of build on you over time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think I would just recommend for anyone out there that has a real specific cancer like a head and neck throat cancer or a cancer of the colon or such that kind of do your research. Go out there. I wanted to give everybody a couple of really good sources to go to that you can look real specifically for the different side effects and what to expect for different types of cancer. One of my favorite places to go is cancercare.org. They have a wealth of information about side effects and drugs and side effects of specific drugs and so forth and ways to help. And they've got a patient survivor area and a caregiver and loved one area. And it's just a really good source. Another invaluable source out there is cancer.org, which is the American Cancer Society website, and then also the National Cancer Society website.
Yeah.
So I think between those three, you can really find out the information on those real specific details that, you know, quite frankly, we just don't have the time on our show to go into each one, and I wish we did, but maybe we can do that in the future is to highlight different cancers and just really talk about treatment side effects for each one.
I think that's a good idea. Thanks for the resources there. And the only other thing I'll say is I don't know if this is still the case, but I do know that in the waiting room, I kind of bonded with this one particular lady. And she even claimed that they were using radiation for pain management. For her.
Right.
And so, you know, that could be a whole nother situation, and perhaps we can look into that as well. So, well, Lucy, you worked hard on this show. I appreciate it. And
I just had a good time talking with you again, as always. And it's just always our joy, isn't it, Sharon, just to come and take what we know from our, you know, limited experiences and but the opportunity that we've been granted to share whatever we can share to help someone else.
Oh, my goodness.
That journey.
Yeah, I hope you guys are able to lean into us for whatever small amount we can contribute to educating you on what's coming, why, and the fact that we're just regular people that have walk this walk. And if you guys have any suggestions or questions, please go to our website and make some suggestions for us. We would love to build a show around it, and we'll go into the websites right at the end. But for now, because this is a wrap on our first two shows on radiation, Lucy, it's time for the not just surviving but thriving tidbit of the day. And guys, that's a time when you set aside the busyness of life and the business of life and bother to look up and recognize the opportunity that life is giving you at that moment, because we're being bombarded with it all the time, yet we're oblivious. And just taking in a moment and really living. It's usually pretty simple, though. Lucy, surely you have one for us today.
Well, you know, Sharon, I think my not just surviving but thriving would be holding that baby.
I knew you were going to do that.
I hate to come up that in again. But, you know, to be honest with you, I had house guests in from Atlanta. I had a mom and dad, a four-year-old, and an eight-year-old. And, you know, I don't know about you, but, you know, when I have house guests, I like to be there. I like to be waiting on them and, you know, preparing a meal and this sort of thing.
You're so good at that, too.
Oh, well, thank you. But, you know, I kind of laid that aside. I thought my friend and the baby's mama were, there was just a lot of tension there. She was upset because she wasn't being able to hold her baby because she was running a fever. Grandmother was having to take care of the baby and the whole household and look after the baby's mama. And it was just kind of a tense situation over there. Not bad tense, but everybody was just tired.
Yeah, it was hard.
I think it helped them not to have to worry about taking the baby out, you know? It's like when I volunteered to do that, it was like this rush of relief came over my friend, and she said, really? Will you really do that? And it wasn't just for her, it was for me because, you know, I had a lot to do, but I just had that minute that I just could lay it down and just bask in a beautiful gift of a baby.
Right.
And just be able to hold her and rock her and, you know, watch those little smiles come up on her face.
Oh, and those sweet baby sounds.
So that's my moment for the week is just basking in the miracle of life, right?
Right. I think that's wonderful. I think that's a perfect, not just surviving, but thriving tidbit. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Well, guys, it's been our pleasure to be here with you today, and just check back with us next week. We'll have another exciting topic for you. But until then, Sharon and I just send our love, our comfort, our blessing to each and every one of you out there. And as always, we are not just surviving, but we are thriving
with you.
Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.